So welcome back again to BadQuaker.com. I'm Ben.
And I'm Kai.
I should start this off today with an apology for last Tuesday. I didn't say anything about it on Wednesday's podcast, but I should say something about it now. I didn't say anything about it on Wednesday's podcast because it just skipped my mind. Imagine that.
No. You? But your mind is so...
Yeah.
It's like a... Like a sieve.
Yeah, because my brain is like a sieve. So, So what took place there was actually, I'll blame it partially, we were talking about this before, partially the fact that I wore full-size, heavy, like hiking shoes all day Sunday, not just to put them on for a little bit and take them back off, but I wore them all day Sunday and then all day Monday. And then Monday afternoon, I was climbing around doing some stuff. And I had been fighting with computers all day and was very tense anyway. And then I had to climb, and instead of using a small step ladder, I climbed up on a chair and then climbed down from the chair.
Isn't the rule that if you climb on a chair, you'll fall and get hurt?
I forgot about that. That was like the Duck Duck Goose one.
That was.
When Kai said, we should do an introduction. We haven't done an introduction for a while. I'm Ben Stone, and this is my daughter, Kai.
Hello.
And we are, to our knowledge, the only father-daughter anarchist/libertarian podcasting/radio team on the internet today.
That's a lot of qualifications.
So when my
kids... We're the best in our class.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, we're number one in our class. We are the top father-daughter anarchist podcasting team on the internet. We're number one.
We're number one.
So when my kids were little, I taught them things through some repetitious sayings that got annoying, but it was intentional. It got their point across. So, for instance, I taught them how to recognize patterns of behavior and patterns by telling them, okay, now watch, duck, duck, goose, duck, duck, goose, duck, duck, goose, duck, duck. What comes next?
Right.
Goose. So if you see patterns that repeat themselves, it's not hard. Well, actually, if you train yourself to watch for patterns that repeat themselves, then it's easier and easier to be able to expect what's right. Going to happen. So, and then one of the other lessons that I taught, and I would repeat this over and over, if you climb on a chair, you'll fall and get hurt. If you climb on a chair, you'll fall and get hurt. Kai, if you climb on a chair...
Yeah, you blow out your knee.
And that's what happened Monday.
There were also various things like pencils and doors.
Oh, yeah. I would regularly take a pencil and go to the side, the part of the door where it actually hinges and where it pivots to open and close, and I would slide the pencil between the door and the door jamb there, right where the pivot area is near the hinges. And I would slowly close the door on the pencil and show the kids as it crushed the pencil and cut it in half. And I would say, if you put your fingers in a door, this is what will happen to your fingers. And I would show them over and over. Or the other thing, for a while.
Which is also fun because it teaches about levers and
force.
And multiplied force.
And pinch
all
points.
All those cool unschooling concepts that are really, really boring to read about in a textbook, but are super cool when you're, destroying things.
The other, do you remember the egg thing? I can't remember which one of you little monkeys used to grab my legs when I'd walk by you.
Oh, I don't know.
It may have been your sister, but one of you guys had an obsession with every time I walked by, you would try to hug me, which translates to, a 250-pound man walking by and a kid suddenly ties up both of his legs in a giant bear hug, which can mean 250 pounds coming crashing to the floor in an unpredictable manner. And so to try to teach the kids not to grab my legs as I walked by, I would use an egg as an example, and I would put an egg down, and then I would put my weight on it and crush it. because I'm showing them they're very small and very delicate, like an egg. And if you grab my legs when I walk by you, I may fall on you and make you look like this egg. So we had little lessons like that. So yeah, I should not have climbed on a chair. I didn't fall and get hurt. I just blew my knee out. And then this presents a thing because I'm old and I'm pretty broken down. I've been in lots and lots of car wrecks and motorcycle wrecks and surfing accidents and tree climbing accidents and rock climbing incidents and it just goes on and on and on. I've had in excess of 35 concussions, and I have arthritis in a bunch of my joints. And
been shot.
I've been shot.
Being shot
multiple times. I've had I don't even know how many bones broken. I questions like that. I have to sit down. Okay, now I'll start with my toes, and I'll work my way up and count as I go. And if I don't lose count by the time I get to my head, then I'll have a number for you.
The sort of things that when doctors ask the questions, they don't believe you when you say the answer.
Yeah, that's the thing, like with the concussion question.
Uh-huh.
A doctor will ask me,
have you ever had a concussion?
Yeah, and then I'll say, yes, I've had many concussions. What, more than two? More than 35. And now that presents a situation where the doctor either thinks I'm lying. Or
thinks you don't know what a concussion is.
Or they think I don't, yeah. Or they'll think, were you a boxer? No, but the problem is once you get over a certain amount of concussions, it's really easy to get more for a whole variety of reasons. One is you're really clumsy.
Right.
Two is that you're really clumsy and you're forgetful about how clumsy you are.
And also spatial reasoning. It's difficult to understand where you're at in relationship with other things.
Yeah, because the more permanently the brain gets these cracks and fissures in it, and then the scar material that comes with those, the more prominent those are in the brain, the less your brain has the ability to do certain functions, like particularly tell where your hands are oriented to your body and how, whether you're up straight up, upright, or whether you're tilted and you get clumsy and forgetful. we have to be careful. This will turn into another brain damage podcast.
Well, the other thing is, and I've dealt with this with doctors, is, when you are routinely in large amounts of pain, their pain scale doesn't.
Yeah, it means nothing.
I've had various reasons for being in large amounts of pain. And so, the doctor says, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much pain are you in? Well, I don't know. Give me something relevant. Are you talking about, can I hold a conversation through the pain?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you talking about I'm lying on the floor almost about to puke because I'm in so much pain?
Yeah.
Where on the scale? And it's such a subjective thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's useless information that they're taught to ask people.
Yeah.
And they don't even think about, really think about this. Is this a logical question to ask me?
Yeah.
Because in my case, I'm not always, but I have cluster headaches at times. They're generally seasonal. They generally come in clusters, oddly enough. they come in a small pack, will happen for a while, and then I'll be relatively free of cluster headaches for maybe, 5-6 months, and then I'll have a little wave of them and then another 5 or 6 months of freedom.
Mm-hmm.
So considering, so if a doctor asks me about my arthritis pain and says on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being the most that you can endure, my thought is to look at the doctor and say, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
You have no idea what pain is like. That would be my phone. So we had a phone interruption because somebody didn't turn their phone off. I wonder who that would be.
So unprofessional.
Anyway, so back to the cluster thing. So a doctor asks me about my arthritic pain, and he's like, on a scale of 1 to 10. Okay, now hold on, doctor. Now, when you say that 10 is the highest level of pain, let me explain to you what the highest level of pain is for me.
Right.
I have pain from cluster headaches that if I don't have a mouth guard handy, I will break my own teeth off by gritting my teeth so hard. Is that the level of pain we're talking about, Doc? Mm-hmm. Is that where your 10 is on the other 15 people you've seen today that you asked that question to?
Right.
Is that what you're talking about? Because of the brain damage I have, I don't have a lot of sensitivity to low levels of pain. So I can literally take a sewing needle and shove it into my skin and not feel pain from it. Is that a 1?
Right.
Or is that a 4?
Right.
Because I think some people might rank that higher than me.
Right.
Now, doctor, now, how am I going to rank my arthritic
pain? And on my pain scale, if I say, well, subjectively mm-hmm. to the pain that I have...
I still didn't wow. turn it off. Oh, no. I'm such a bad person. I'm such a bad podcaster. Anyway, go ahead.
Anyway, you know, subjectively to the pain scale that I have, where, you know, 10 is the worst pain that I've ever felt in my life, you know, this pain may only rank a 5. Mm-hmm. But if I say 5, in your mind, you place it at a way different point than what it actually is.
Right.
Because my 5 is most people's 10.
Right.
You know? Yeah, this I get irritated because I have endometriosis, mm-hmm. you know, so I have like menstrual cramps that are, mm-hmm. you can't stand up, yeah. you can't do anything,
that would,
you
know, that maybe put somebody else in a hospital.
Right. It's the kind of thing where, you know, I take Vicodin and then I'm not crying.
Yeah.
I'm still in pain. Mm-hmm. I'm just not crying from the pain anymore, you yeah. know, but I see people who are like, oh, you know, I had to take a Midol. My cramps were so bad. And I'm like, got nothing for you.
Yeah.
There's no sympathy.
Yeah. I hate to be cold, but I know what you mean, because I see commercials on TV. It's like, I take this for my arthritis. It's Tylenol extra yeah. arthritis pain or whatever, Bayer arthritis or whatever. And I just look at that and I think, you know,
I would kill to have the kind of pain that could be taken away by that.
Yeah, wouldn't that be great?
Like, that would be fabulous.
When I was 30, I had that kind of arthritis pain. I had arthritis pain that I could take an over-the-counter pill for and then go on with my work. And, you yeah. know, and it would be a little discomfort now and then. I'd be like, oh, wow, I wish I hadn't had that last, you know, massive truck landing on my head. But, oh, well, anyway.
But, I mean... And this is the problem with, you know, this is the problem with any sort of standardized medical care.
Right.
Is because human beings are not standard.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not when you have a state run or mm-hmm. insurance run or anything that's in this group, mm-hmm. you know, where you're going to a doctor, but you're not developing a relationship with that doctor.
Yeah.
That doctor has no basis for comparison.
Yeah.
You know? With your doctor, mm-hmm. you've been going to the same doctor. So you can say, my pain has increased over the last 6 months by this amount.
Yeah.
You know, and he begins to know what your particular pain scale is. Mm-hmm. So when you say, this is unbearable pain, he knows...
Yeah.
That prescribing you a Tylenol mm-hmm. is not the way to go.
Yeah. We went through that early on when I first became disabled, and we were trying to deal with daily migraines, cluster headaches that were hitting randomly, sometimes several times a week, sometimes every day, every night. Mm-hmm. They typically hit at nighttime for me. And at first, the doctors that I was seeing were obsessed with trying to give me enough pain medication to break the cycle of, you know, of these headaches and, mm-hmm. and everything. And so they kept escalating the type of pain medication and the, you know, the frequency and the medication levels and all this. And it got to the point of where I was basically just sitting around slobbering on myself, you know, staring at the wall for hours at a time. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't stopping the pain.
Right.
You know, because when a cluster hits... It does. There's no such thing as enough pain reliever to get over it.
Because it's not the kind of pain that is, you know, it's not like, oh, here's the reason why there's this wound.
Yeah.
You know, it's flooding your brain with specific.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can do to stop that.
Mm-hmm. So it took a long time for me to be able to break away from the doctor remedy of mm-hmm. keeping me so drugged that I couldn't open my eyes. And getting to the point of where, you know, here's what I can do. I can protect my teeth. Mm-hmm. I can make sure that the environment around me is such that I can get to a private place very quickly. Mm-hmm. And I can realize in my mind that the cluster is going to be 15 minutes and it's going to be over. Mm-hmm. And now I've learned this very valuable lesson that however deep pain might be, if I know in my mind thoroughly that it's not causing any damage, mm-hmm. and that it will end, then it doesn't matter how bad it hurts. Mm-hmm. I can make it through it.
Yeah.
And that's not because I'm like super Mr. Tough Guy or whatever. It's because I've come to a logical conclusion that however bad it hurts, if I can keep myself from hurting myself through something like gritting my teeth so that there's no actual damage, and if I understand that no matter how it feels at this moment, it will end, then I can get through it. Mm-hmm. Now, I'll just take this to an example of the state now, since we're, you know. since we twist everything to be about the state in some way. So I can look at the state this way. I can say, as long as I can stay out of the reach of the state and I don't get damaged physically by the state, they don't haul me to Guantanamo, they don't do something that's going to permanently damage me in some way. Mm-hmm. If I can stay out of the actual grip of the state, I can endure anything because I know the state is a temporary condition and it will go away. Mm-hmm. And that's an act of faith to a certain extent, just like with every headache.
Right.
I am standing up in faith going, because of the duck, duck, goose thing,
right.
I know the pattern. I know the headache will end. And if I can just keep myself from hurting myself in that time frame, then it will end and peace will come.
And there's also the thought pattern that goes, nothing I can do will make this better.
Right.
Screaming will not make this better.
Right.
Flailing around will not make this better.
Yeah.
Snipping at people and being angry, not going to make this better. So what can I do?
Mm-hmm.
I can sit and I can endure it until it's over.
Yeah. I can wait it out. And that's what we have to do with the state. Attacking it, you know, I know.
And also drugging yourself to the point of not realizing it's there is also not helpful.
Well, that's kind of what the general public does. That's mm-hmm. the answer the general public does. We'll drug ourselves with TV. We'll drug ourselves with the political game, mm-hmm. you know, with all the entertainment of politics. We'll drug ourselves with the news.
With the ideology that we can actually affect change.
Yeah, yeah. We'll drug ourselves with any of these things just so that we don't have to face the reality that what we're dealing with.
Yeah.
You know, when in fact, if we just buckle down and don't let it touch us, we'll get through it and the state will collapse, mm-hmm. and then we can make a real civilization.
We can go about our lives.
Yeah. But I think I started that rant in reference to the fact that I took a day off work. I flaked out.
Called a sick day.
Yeah, I pulled a sick day. I put a thing on Facebook for any of the people who are not on that don't have Bad Quaker on their Facebook, or for people who don't do Facebook at all. I put a note on there.
Nonsense! There are no humans that don't do Facebook.
I put a note on there, something to the effect of that there wouldn't be a podcast because we had computer issues and I had injured my knee and that I was on pain meds and was incomprehensible. And then I said, and if the pain meds are not going to help enough, a water glass of whiskey is going to, and then, the, you know, it's like, although that might make a fun podcast.
Do it. Drunk podcasting.
All right, let me just sing one more tune.
Let me tell you about the state.
Oh, boy. Have you heard me yodel?
But, you know, to a certain degree, alcohol is more effective at, mm-hmm. or just as effective as the pain medication is.
Yeah. So, for instance, if I have my choice, I can take a Vicodin that the doctor has prescribed to me and that is entirely legal, and it's what the expert has told me I should take under these circumstances. Mm-hmm. I have the prescription for it. I have all the thing. I've done everything I'm supposed to do. Mm-hmm. So I take this Vicodin, and it's very hard on my stomach, so I'd better have some food with it, and I'd better, I can't drive.
Yeah, because puking Vicodin is a really unpleasant experience.
Yeah. So you can't drive when you're on heavy medications like that. So you have to schedule yourself so that you're not going to be out driving. So you take the Vicodin, and it'll last really, it only really helps for about 2.5 hours. Mm-hmm. It takes like an hour to work, and it'll help for about 2.5 hours. And you can't take another one and for 5-6 hours, according to four to six hours, according to what your prescription is.
Right.
So if I can't take another one for 4 hours, and I can't drive during that time, and it's really not...
And it takes an hour to kick in.
Takes an hour to kick in, and it's really only going to barely take the edge off the pain anyway. Or I can have 2 straight shots of a decent bourbon that's cheaper than the Vicodin, unless you have insurance to pay for the Vicodin right. for you, which is, you know, because that means somebody else is paying for it right. in a sense.
Well, it means... You know, in a perfect world, it means that you're still paying for it. You're just paying for it in advance.
Yeah, over time or whatever through your yeah. insurance account. But on a dollar-to-dollar basis, if there were no exterior influences involved, 2 shots of a decent bourbon would be cheaper than 1 pill of Vicodin.
Right.
So then, we don't know that because we don't know what a real market would be in either product.
Right.
Because they're both so abused by the state. So anyway, so that's irrelevant. The price is irrelevant. But you have 2 shots of a decent bourbon or 1 Vicodin. Now, the 2 shots of a decent bourbon are going to hit you pretty quickly. And they're going to knock the edge off the pain. They're not going to take all the pain away. And they're not going to make, well, at least for me, they're not going to make me drunk.
Right.
I'm still going to, my words are not going to slur any more than they normally do.
Brain damage.
But my thinking is not going to be fogged. I'm going to be fully functional in every way, except I wouldn't want to drive.
Right.
So I can't drive. I've taken 2 shots of a good bourbon. They're going to last about 4 hours, and they're going to start wearing off, and I'm going to start feeling the worst part of the pain again. Or I can take another Vicodin every 4 hours, a Vicodin. So then again, if I do what the doctor says, I'm taking a Vicodin every 4 hours indefinitely. Mm-hmm. But if I was just having 2 shots of bourbon every 4 hours, I would be a bad person.
Right.
The world would scorn me. I would be considered a problem.
Right.
People would want to have an intercession with me. People would whisper. Now my tongue got stuck. And I haven't even had any bourbon or Vicodin today. But people would whisper behind my back, well, you know, if it weren't for that problem, mm-hmm. you know. But nobody would say that if you were taking Vicodin every 4 hours.
They would say, you know, oh, he's sick. That poor guy. He's disabled. He's got to take that.
Yeah. Now, the same thing goes with the doctor. Before AMA, 150 years ago, a doctor might prescribe you a shot of bourbon. Mm-hmm. Every 2 hours, take a shot of bourbon. He might say that. Mm-hmm. But no doctor is going to tell you that nowadays.
No.
And what's changed? Is the Vicodin really safer than the bourbon?
I was about to say that. Is the bourbon harsher on your liver than Vicodin?
No, the Vicodin is much harder on your liver.
You know, so there's no reason.
Yeah.
For that.
Not only that, however you might feel about things like evolution or whatever, whether or not you believe in evolution, you have to realize that humans adapt. Mm-hmm. All animals adapt. Mm-hmm. Whether or not you completely accept the idea of evolution is not the point. All animals adapt. Mm-hmm. If you don't believe that, just notice what feels cold when, you know, in February as opposed to what feels cold in August.
Right.
You know, 70, according to where you live and everything, 70 degrees might be hot in February, and 70 degrees might cause you to shiver in August because humans are adaptable. Well, we have been self-medicating with alcohol for a very long time. Mm-hmm. Some people don't adapt to that well. Other people are very adapted to it.
And it's a personal thing, you know. Just like anything else, if it doesn't suit your physiology,
you shouldn't
do it.
Exactly.
And if there's a guy in a white coat with a state stamp of approval who's saying you should do it, mm-hmm. and it doesn't work for you, then don't do it.
Yeah. And back to my evolutionary thing, we've only been taking pain medications like that for a very short mm-hmm. window of time. And some of these more, you know, the newer, more radical ones, some stuff comes on the market And then 4 or 5 years later, they realize they have to yank it off the market because people are dropping dead of heart attacks from it.
Yeah.
You know,
which, you know, alcohol has had what?
Well, in lighter forms, in the in not in the distilled form, but in the
like wine and
That comes from fermentation. At least 40,000 years.
Yeah,
at least 40,000 years that humans have been ingesting fermented.
A 40,000 year clinical trial.
Mm-hmm.
We know what the side effects of alcohol are.
Right,
it's well documented,
mm-hmm.
but. Vicodin has only been around, I don't know. But
very, very brief window of time.
No time at all compared to alcohol.
And here's the thing, too, with the two products. If I take a Vicodin every 4 hours, here's what's going to happen. Over the course of the day, it will take the edge off the worst of the pain. When I go to bed at night, I am going to have hours and hours of screaming nightmares. Nightmares where I wake up flailing my arms and legs, nightmares where that are unimaginable, that are crazy.
No, they are imaginable. Obviously, you imagined them.
No, they were real. So if I go a whole day of taking Vicodin every 4 hours like I'm supposed to, I'm going to have just crazy nightmares. Then the next day, if I do this for at least 2 days in a row, sometimes one day I'll do it, but if I do this 2 days in a row, I'm going to have constipation so bad that I have to take other drugs mm-hmm. to help me with the constipation.
Well, and there's a coming down off of it.
Yeah. It tears my nervous system up.
Yeah. You know?
Whereas if I take... Let's just say a good bourbon. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about cheap garbage, but a good bourbon. If I have a shot of good bourbon every 2 hours, I will never get drunk, and I will never have a hangover.
Mm-hmm.
I will never feel bad in any way. It will take the edge off of that pain. But the problem is, if I go around, you know, with a flask in my pocket, like used to be common 200 mm-hmm. years ago, and every couple hours I take a sip out of that flask, everybody in society is going to think I have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But if I carry
a
little...
And if your doctor told you to do that, he would probably lose his medical license.
Yeah, yeah. Or if you told your doctor, hey, I'd prefer to do this than take your pills, he's going to immediately, on his little chart, he's going to write down that you're an alcoholic.
Yeah.
And then he's not going to give you the pills.
Yeah.
Or if he does, he's risking his license again because he's knowingly handing a drug to a person who the state considers to be an alcoholic.
Yeah, who has addiction problems.
Yeah, yeah. Even though, you know, the one is far safer than the other and doesn't have the side effects.
Well, and even going beyond, you know, managing symptoms, a doctor is never going to say, you know, you come in and you have arthritis.
Yeah.
The doctor's not going to say, okay, well, let's try you on this anti-inflammation diet.
Yeah.
You know, let's try to fix the problem.
Yeah.
Because doctors aren't there to fix problems.
Right. They're not going to ask what's causing the problem.
Yeah.
He's going to find out what to treat the symptoms with.
Yeah. And with modern technology, you can take a hair from your head
mm-hmm.
and send it to a laboratory
yeah.
and they can look at it and say, okay, you're deficient in this and this and this, and you've got too much of this and this, and tell you exactly what your health profile is
right.
and exactly how to fix
the
whatever
doctor,
problem you have.
The doctor could do that.
But they don't.
No.
And they won't.
Doesn't dawn on them to even think that way.
Because they have a list of, if you are exhibiting symptom A, prescribe pill B.
Mm-hmm.
If you are exhibiting, and they just go down the line.
Imagine if a mechanic did this with your car. Let's say you're driving along in your car and one of your headlights stops working. And so you take it to your mechanic and you're like, hey, only one of my headlights is working. And he walks around and he looks at it and he goes, okay, well, we got a solution for that. And he duct tapes a flashlight to the top of your hood of your car on that side.
Mm-hmm.
And he runs a long wire back and through your side window so that you have to tie this wire together when you want the light to come on.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be like, you're not a very good mechanic, are you? Why don't you find out why the headlight is not burning rather than try to tape on a fake headlight
mm-hmm.
onto my... with duct tape, you know that.
Yeah.
I'm thinking maybe you need to go back to mechanic school. You know,
I'm gonna find a different mechanic.
You don't mind if I don't talk to you anymore, do you?
That's real nice. I'm gonna go.
Yeah, But that's kind of, you know, the doctor kind of does that. Mm-hmm. He ignores whatever might be the cause of this, and he's going to try to put something entirely foreign on to try to fix the what he perceives as being the problem.
Well, I ran into this issue. I had, like I said, I have endometriosis, and my doctor's answer to that was to put me on birth control pills. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, you know, if I go on birth control pills, I'm going to have issues with my gallbladder. Mm-hmm. And his response was, oh, well, you'll have to bring that up with your regular physician.
Yeah, it's not his department.
Which, why would I bring up with a different doctor a side effect of a medication that you put me on? But that is the kind of thinking that they do.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sorry, I don't deal in that organ. hello, I'm a complete human being.
Uh-huh.
You know, all of me is interconnected to the rest of me. I don't take my car to, you know, oh, you have a starter problem. You have to go to the starter problem guy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, you have a headlight problem. You have to go to the headlight guy. You just take it to the mechanic.
Uh-huh.
And the mechanic deals with all of it.
And that's to a large degree because there is no AMA.
Mm-hmm.
One nationwide organization authorized by the government, using the aggression of the government to decide what all the auto mechanics of mm-hmm. America are.
People think
AMA, Auto Mechanics of America. That's pretty slick, huh?
Hey, check that out.
And yet cars run.
Shockingly enough.
Yeah. In spite of the fact that the government still gets involved on the manufacturing end.
Most of the time they run.
Yeah. We need to break off for our commercial segment. Oh,
is it that time already?
It is. Let's hear from our sponsors. How would you like to support BadQuaker.com and get something nice for yourself at the same time? I want to tell you about Survival Gear Bags. It's run by my friend Kelly, who believes in and adheres to the non-aggression principle. Kelly's customers know him for his great customer service and his personal touch because Kelly handles all customer service himself. The main focus of Survival Gear Bags is to allow you to build your own custom emergency kits with quality gear. Now, I know this because I bought my bug out bag from Survival Gear Bags over 2 years ago, and I've gone all over the country with it by my side. And you can rest assured that the prices will always be the best they can be at Survival Gear Bags. And if you use the link from badquaker.com, they'll probably throw in something for free for you with your order. Now, how do you do this? Well, it's simple. You go to badquaker.com. On the right side of the page, click on the picture of the backpack. Then look around at Survival Gear Bags and find the stuff you want. You'll help badquaker.com, and you'll support a merchant that's one of us. Now, I want to tell you about another way you can support badquaker.com and get something really cool at the same time. Shire Silver. Shire Silver is the proud seller of silver and gold trade cards. Shire Silver believes that silver and gold trade cards will show the world a better way to save, spend, and share precious metals. So what are silver and gold trade cards? There are specific weights of gold and silver laminated inside credit card-sized tradable cards. They're a handy and affordable way to trade precious metals. These cards received nationwide recognition when they were widely used as barter at the New Hampshire Porcupine Festival. You want a beer and a hot dog? Hand them a Shire Silver 5 card and get a Shire Silver 1 spot back as change. So again, what do? Well, you go to badquaker.com. On the right side, just below the backpack, you'll see the Shire Silver trade cards. Click on those cards and then check out Shire Silver's site. Be sure and watch Ron's video that's right there on the main page. And then swap some of those ridiculous Federal Reserve notes for something of real value. Something you can keep, trade, or give as the coolest gift ever. But be sure and use the link from badquaker.com. Thanks, folks. Wasn't that a lovely commercial?
That makes me want to run out and buy product. I don't know. I feel bad because I feel like we're mocking the commercials, but I mean, they really are good people.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
and
we're just, I think we're mocking it because we're still uncomfortable with the idea of putting commercials in.
Yeah,
and exactly. We haven't quite figured out a smooth way to do it. And so it feels very awkward.
Yeah.
But they're good products.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, yes. And you had told me to try to figure out something to get you a bag from Gear Bags.
Yes, I want one.
So we got to do that sometime.
Hint, hint, wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Yeah. Maybe I can talk Kelly into letting us test some items.
I could do a review. I don't have a bug out bag.
They can't see your...
They can't see my air quotes.
Your air quotes,
I'm viciously air quoting.
So we were talking, well, before I went off into every other conceivable direction, we were talking about my excuse for taking Tuesday off. So I blew my knee out, and the bad thing about, and that wasn't a one incident thing.
Right, it was just the chair.
Yeah, I had been wearing shoes for 2 days, and so people shoes listening are saying, evil. Yeah, well, then, yeah, people listening are like, you were wearing shoes for 2 days, and that's odd? Yeah.
Yes.
That's odd. So wearing shoes rather than being, you know, the way nature intended feet to be, put unusual pressure on my already weakened knee, and then climbing on the chair was just the little bit that pushed it over the edge.
Watching people. Now, I should preface this with saying that I've been a professional hippie now for about 5 years.
You get paid to be a hippie?
Well, sometimes. Unless the government's listening, in which case, no. No, I don't.
And to just explain for our newer listeners, you were, not currently, but you were a Renaissance festival worker.
Yes.
On and off for quite some time.
A transient vendor. Unless you're the government, in which case I was homeless.
Yeah.
And had no income.
So that was like...
But there was a lot of things like sleeping in the park and, you know, being around people, and not sleeping in a park in like, you know, squatting in a park.
Right.
But the Renaissance Festival was being held in the park, and they had a camping area, and so we lived in the park.
Right.
But...
And you had tents and camping equipment and all the fun right. stuff.
Yeah. I personally was tenting it because I was poor. But actually, that's how I met my husband. Mm-hmm. And
because he was rich and had a trailer.
His appeal was that he had a trailer and a refrigerator and a microwave. He was living a good life. And I was living in a tent with no electricity and no running water and a porta potty. That was fun. But the point is that in situations like that, you don't get fired from work for showing up barefoot.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's no social pressures for me to wear shoes,
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to wear shoes.
Especially in the warmer areas where you were at Renaissance festivals.
Right. And with the exception of October, I really wasn't ever in an area that was cold. Because
mm-hmm.
when it got cold, I went to Florida. And then when it got hot, I went to Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the wonderful things about being able to work that kind of a job mm-hmm. where you can, you know, change with seasons and so forth.
But, you know, so for probably a good 5 years, now there were bits of that on and off where, you know, I was off the road and mm-hmm. legitimate, so to speak. So I would have to cram my feet into unnatural, uncomfortable shoes. But for the most part, pretty much since I've been born, if I have the chance of shoes or no shoes, it's no shoes.
Right.
Like, that's not even a question.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember as a kid running around barefoot in the middle of the desert.
Yeah.
You know, watch out for the goat heads. Don't step on those. Which are not actual goat heads. They're a thorn bush.
Yeah.
But
yeah, that's for anybody who's not in the southwestern deserts. The goat head is a particularly nasty thorn. It's a, well, not a thorn. That would be what projects out of the goat head.
Yeah.
It's actually a seed pod. It's that's about the size of like, the main body of it is about the size of a BB.
Mm-hmm.
But then these like maybe quarter inch spikes stick out in different directions that cause it.
And it's a flat plant.
Yeah, it lays along the ground. It grows flat along the ground. So it doesn't stick up where you can see it, obvious.
And it's not, I mean, everything in the desert is pretty much uniformly colored.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not like, oh, look, there's a bush on the ground. Don't step on it.
Yeah. You know? And the little thorns themselves, the stickers, are made in such a way that no matter how they fall and land on something, they always have several thorns sticking down and one sticking straight up.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the particular shape of it, you know, it's made so that some passing animal will step on it and carry it away, right, and then embed it into the ground somewhere.
Right.
So they always have one thorn sticking up. And that thorn is like a quarter of an inch long, and it's got a tiny little barb on the end that's almost invisible.
That itches.
Yeah, and it's got a really, really super mild poison that means that once you step on it and you walk for a few minutes and that poison starts to react with you, you want to stop and get that out of there as quick as possible.
Right. Which means depositing it in a new location.
Yeah, which is what the seed, you know.
That was its goal in the first place. Yeah. But, you know, you have to watch out for those and rattlesnakes. And...
Since we're on seeds and everything, you had a correction to your...
The nuts. Yeah. We were talking about nuts.
And walnuts are not nuts.
Walnuts are not nuts. Because I had remembered that there was something about nuts and drupes, and I couldn't remember which was a nut and which was a droop.
Right.
But nuts are, droops are nut or are they seed pods that are surrounded by fruit.
Right.
So
like a walnut.
A walnut, a pecan.
A peach. Which is an almond.
Apricot.
But don't eat the peach. Don't eat the inside of the peach seed that looks like an almond because it's poison.
Right.
And whatever you do, don't boil down that. No. Yeah. Not this podcast.
Not going there.
Not unless we get that virtual private network set up. And then I'll talk to you about boiling peach seeds.
Just saying, you wouldn't ever want to do that.
No.
Then you wouldn't ever want to.
With a blowgun and a dart. And No.
If you see any funky colored frogs lying out.
So where we were going with that was about shoes, and that you had spent most of your life without shoes.
Shoes. I don't like shoes.
Because the South, and I was that way when I was a kid in the deserts, and, you know, my feet were so leathery that I could walk on hot blacktop and it was no problem. Just run out. As a teenager, we would go hunting rabbits. And one of the highlights of hunting rabbits was me chasing down and catching a rabbit.
Right.
Because I would run, you know, in the desert. I'm chasing this rabbit and get right up on him and grab the rabbit. grab the rabbit.
With your spear and magic helmet.
It was an odd way of, you know, I suppose most people don't go rabbit hunting like that, from what I understand.
No, most people don't eat rabbit.
Oh, but my point was I would do that barefooted.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you get used to...
It's very unnatural to wear shoes, and it's very, to me, it's very unpleasant to wear shoes, because, especially female shoes, because from about the age of like, well, I guess now, from the time you walk, if you're female, you slowly shape your feet into these really unnatural, weird shaped feet that fit into, you know, like high heels and stuff.
Yeah.
And I've never done that. I didn't wear those kinds of shoes. And so my feet are wide at the toe because that's how feet should be.
Yeah.
So they don't fit into those kinds of shoes.
Those bizarre things that are pointed.
Yeah, no, I don't even try that. But even like the round toes shoes that look more comfortable, you know, it's not a matter of finding a shoe that's made well enough to be comfortable. It's a matter of my feet have not been deformed. So they're not comfortable. I wouldn't be able to put my feet in those, you know, old Chinese foot binding shoes either, because from the early age, I didn't have my feet bound in that manner.
So what you're saying is if aliens landed here tomorrow from some faraway place they'd never seen us or didn't know anything about us, and they landed here tomorrow and they saw what people in Western culture do to their feet, they would align that, you know, in the same way as we think about the way ancient Chinese used to bind their feet, or the way perhaps tribes in Africa put rings in their lips, or, you know, the people in Southeast Asia that put, that the ladies put the rings mm-hmm. around their necks and break their collarbones down and make mm-hmm. their neck appear really super long.
Yeah, it's or, totally unnatural.
Or the way hippies put things in their ears and stretch them all out and make them look like hula hoops hanging off the side of their head.
Yeah. You know, at least, and I don't even have, like, for that kind of stuff, like your ears and, you know, nose and whatever. I'm okay with that because uh-huh. it doesn't really impede
your ability your survival, to walk. Yeah.
You know, but your feet are really important.
Mm-hmm.
And your feet really affect the way the rest of your body feels.
Yeah, they really
do. You know, people, you cram your feet into these unnatural shoes and then you walk in this horrifically unnatural gait.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're like, why does my lower back hurt?
Yeah. Or in my case, my knees.
Yeah.
Yeah. The heel toe is not a natural way that people walk. And you know that because watch a little kid
mm-hmm.
who's walking around barefoot and they walk on their toes
mm-hmm.
all the time. They walk on their, even running, they'll mm-hmm. run on their toes. If they're accustomed to being barefoot, that's how they'll move.
Mm-hmm.
So now, like, tell me truthfully, are you getting paid by that shoe company that makes those fancy shoes with the toes?
I wish. We can be, if Vibrams wants to sponsor us, I'll be all about that.
I don't think they would want to sponsor us. They're not exactly a liberty-oriented company.
No, considering that they supported SOPA.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, you know, it's funny because everybody on the internet thinks uh-huh. of Vibram and they think the funky toe shoes.
Right.
But Vibrams are military sole. That's what they do.
Yeah,
they make produce, the soles of boots.
Yeah, they produce the soles for military boots.
Yeah.
That's their main product line.
And they're not going to do anything.
The hippie shoes are just a sideline.
Yeah, they're not going to do anything to bite that hand.
Right.
You know, that's their bread and butter, and
yeah,
you know.
So if you want to find some hippie shoes to sponsor us, you're going to have to find a different hippie shoe other than that one.
Yeah, well, if you have to wear shoes, now I have a pair of the toe shoes, and mm-hmm. I like them, but for me personally, I think if you have to wear shoes, if you're of the mindset, or if you're, you know, if you're of the mindset that we live in such an urbanized culture that mm-hmm. you don't want to step on nails, or right. you don't want to step on,
well, we're in Western Ohio,
it's chewing tobacco,
spit and gum is what is everywhere on every sidewalk in Western Ohio.
Yeah,
tobacco, spit and gum.
I like the style of shoe that's basically a little thin strip of leather you tie on with, or not leather, rubber, sorry, mm-hmm. rubber, that you tie on with like leather thongs, hmm. and you just get the piece of rubber and you trim it to your size foot, and then you poke a hole in it, you tie it on with leather thongs.
Is this like the tire thing?
Yes. If you've ever read Steal This Book, they talk about doing that with tires, but mm-hmm. that was really only relevant in the 60s because they have steel belted tires now, and you can't do that.
Well. Right.
You can buy kits online where they send you the piece of rubber and they send you all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a word for the shoe type
mm-hmm.
that I've seen, and I know the word, but I have no idea how to pronounce it.
Yeah, it's one of those
it's
words.
It's like harachas or harachis or
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't know how to say it. I spend far too much time online and not enough time amongst people who would be saying those kinds of words.
Uh-huh.
So, but it's a type of shoe that, you know, is, it doesn't offer like any arch support or anything like that because mm-hmm. that's all useless garbage anyway.
Yeah.
You know,
actually harms your feet.
It does.
And,
now,
well,
if you took your hands, I like to say it because my feet, I'm capable of like picking stuff up with my toes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm capable of spreading my toes out.
Mm-hmm.
Capable of moving my toes independently of each other, you know. Mm-hmm. And some people who have worn shoes exclusively their entire lives, like
right.
all the time,
right.
they can't do that. They don't have that muscle control in their feet. And they're kind of like, oh, you're a weird freak, you know, monkey toad freak. I'm like, well, you know, if you took your hands and you taped them up with tape so that you couldn't move any of your fingers and you kept them that way
for like
12 hours every single day.
Yeah, for like 30 years.
Mm-hmm. You wouldn't be able to move your fingers either.
Yeah.
You know, your muscles would have atrophied to the point where you couldn't use them.
And that's the thing I think with most people who have worn shoes all their life. They need that arch support. They need that, you know, that that slightly heightened heel. They need all those advantages because they've had their feet in an unnatural position for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. And they are now dependent upon it. It's like, you know, if you took a perfectly healthy person and they walked with a crutch, even though they were a perfectly healthy person, they walk with a crutch nonstop for 10 years, they wouldn't be able to walk without the crutch.
And people say, you know, oh, how can you walk? Because, you know, you walk across gravel. Ah, I could never walk barefoot across gravel. Well, you can if you, I mean, not right now.
Build up to it.
You can't take your shoes off for the first time ever in your life and walk across gravel.
Right.
You know, no, of course you can't.
And you especially can't, even if your feet are tough.
Yeah.
You can't walk heel to toe across gravel.
No. No.
It's a good way to really do some serious damage to your heel.
Yeah.
But the ball of your feet, which is the padding part up around the base of your toes, it flexes and adjusts to walking across. When you're used to it, you're not going to, you know, when your skin is tender, it's different. But once your feet adjust to that, you can walk across gravel with no problem at all because your feet flex around those things and you just go right across
it. So if there's something sitting on the ground and you step on it, instead of it driving into your heel, your foot can flex around it and you can catch it and it doesn't hurt you.
The other advantage of when you learn this and you're walking like that, you literally feel with each step. You don't just plop, 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 you know. Each step that goes, it's like watching a cat walk. You watch the difference between a cat and a dog when they go zipping across you know, the dog is like, it's almost like his feet are numb. He just goes, whoom. But the cat seems to feel every step that she makes or he makes. And that's because they do. They actually feel every step they make. A cat's paws are tremendous. There's a lot of nerve endings in their paws that dogs don't have. They have, you know, sort of those pads. If you look at the bottom of a dog's feet, they don't look like real skin.
Right.
It's a weird texture. And so they're very tough.
But cats actually, they have, it's very much like human skin.
Yeah. And they feel when they put their feet down in a wild setting, a cat is feeling the ground constantly to feel for like a mouse or whatever like that. Cause it can feel under the ground or it can feel under bushes or under, you know, whatever, rubble or leaves or whatever. It's feeling that with its paws as it's touching it, and it's also feeling with its whiskers as they're sensing motion and everything. That's part of its hunting characteristics.
Yeah, I feel, you know, I feel a lot of sadness for people who are so sheltered from life, who are so sheltered from the planet that we live on. You know, I mean, there are people that, I'm an adult, I can't go barefoot in grass. You know, that's something for kids to do. Or that's something no one should do. You know, you have these parents who wrap their kids' feet in bubble wrap, basically. You know?
Anything rather than let them experience life.
That's so sad. You know? Yeah. And yes, I have cut my feet open badly walking barefoot.
Yeah.
And no, I would not have done that had I worn shoes. But you know, a week of pain is worth experiencing the ground. You know, it's worth feeling warm concrete underneath your feet or running in grass in the springtime, you know.
The other thing with that, too, is your feet heal. If you're accustomed to being barefoot all the time, your feet heal tremendously faster than if your feet are accustomed to having laced wrappings, bindings around them. Because you don't have the same level of circulation that you do with open feet like
that. The other thing, people say all the time, oh, it's disgusting, it's dirty, you know. But If I don't wear shoes, my feet don't smell.
Right.
Ever.
Yeah, that's a myth. That's a really illogical myth. People think that if you're barefooted all the time, your feet will stink. No. If you take feet and you cram them into a plastic or leather, you wrap them up in something that can't let any air or any moisture go in and out, then what happens is moisture develops in there and bacteria start to eat that nutrient-rich sweat that you're putting into there. And even when you take your feet out of those shoes, the bacteria are still in the shoes having a feast. And every time you put your feet in those shoes, you're putting your feet into these buckets of bacteria, and they're just going crazy eating that sweat. And that's where the stink comes from.
Yep.
The stink doesn't come from your own human skin. The stink comes from the bacteria that are thriving off of the moisture that didn't get to evaporate because they're all crammed
but
into these little...
But, you know, my fingers don't smell.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, my fingers, if I were to take them and shove them in a mitten for hours and hours every day.
Or a plastic bag.
Yeah, and then pull them out, they would be sweaty and smelly and...
So literally, if you took your hands and you wrap them up in plastic like most people do their feet... within a few hours, your hands would stink. And if you did that every single day, then you wouldn't be able to get rid of that stink because the bacteria would start growing in the grooves of your hands. And we call that athlete's feet when it's particular strains of critters like that. But there can be...
And so the answer, you go to the doctor and you say, I have this fungus or I have this bacteria growing on my feet. My feet are horrific.
Yeah.
And the doctor says, oh, well, here, have an antibiotic or have an antifungal. And the doctor doesn't say, hey, quit cramming your feet into buckets of bacteria every day. And, oh, gee, I don't know, expose them to the sun. maybe some sunlight, some air.
Mm-hmm.
Like...
Yeah, no, we're going to tape this flashlight onto the...
No, there's no logic to it at all.
Mm-hmm.
None.
Had we intended on this to be a completely hippie health... Are we going to start talking about health food now?
We could.
Well, that's back to the nutrition thing, though. A lot of the things that doctors prescribe medications for to treat the symptom... really could be taken care of with a better nutritional plan. You know, my case, well, yours even more vivid, but my case is, it's very obvious for me if I'm getting too much grains in my diet, then my joints start to swell, I start to get far more painful. And if I can eliminate grains out of my diet for 2 or 3 weeks straight, and, you know, and no exceptions, if I can get grains out of my diet for a couple weeks, I start getting almost athletic. You know, I'm just full of energy. My joints move good. The problem is, how can you do that in normal society?
Right.
You know.
Without turning into a food Nazi.
Yeah.
Without, I don't eat that.
Yeah.
You know.
And you're affected differently, but you're kind of in the same boat with...
Well, for years, you know, I had... It's a well-documented phenomenon in animals, in dogs and cats. But when you start talking to doctors, they tell you it doesn't happen in humans.
Mm-hmm.
But you get hot spots.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get little, like... It feels like somebody's taking a cigarette and putting it out on your skin.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what it feels like. And it just, it itches and it burns and there's no reason for it. There's nothing on your skin. It's just...
But you tend to want to pay attention to that spot because it's bugging you.
Right.
And that's why a dog will start licking one spot, or a cat will, and they'll get to the point where they lick all the fur off that spot and then it gets worse. And...
Yeah. You know, as a human, I can rationalize and say there's no reason for that. Leave it alone. It'll go away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but... Yeah. As a dog, you can't tell a dog that. But I found out that was directly because I ate soy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anytime I would eat soy, I would start getting that. I would start getting muscle aches and joint pain and, you know, all of the things that if I went to a doctor and I said, I have this, they would say, you have fibromyalgia. Here's an antidepressant pill.
Yeah.
Which is because of an allergic reaction to soy.
And then you go and look at the dog food.
Yeah.
And it's corn and wheat and
soy.
Yeah, and soy.
You know. And for me, if I eat too much gluten, I am living off Rolaids.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if it gets too bad, it'll eventually get to the point where I have way too much acid reflux and I end up, like, throwing up.
Yeah. There's a very, very old Saturday Night Live skit with Steve Martin where he is a medieval doctor from, you know, they don't give a specific time frame, but mm-hmm. you're thinking like maybe 12, 1300, something like that. And so he's bleeding his patients one after the other. And every patient that comes in to see him, the answer is need to bleed him more. And, you know, this patient's so weak, you've bled her 9 times this week, doctor. She's so weak, she can barely walk. Well, we need to bleed her some more. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's, and then somebody challenges him and he's like, what? Do you question modern science? And because it was.
It was.
In its day, that was modern science. But
you know,
yet,
and 50 years ago, you know, we had specific protocol that we now look on and mm-hmm. go, oh, I can't believe people were that stupid.
Yeah. Well, was it Louis Pasteur that was trying to get doctors to wash their hands?
I think
And this, it got to the point of where the state was trying to ban him from doing any of his experimentation or anything because, yeah. you know, all the universities were up in arms about this crazy lunatic that wanted them to wash their hands when they went from one surgery to another surgery.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, this is a good time to say. Folks, thanks for listening to BadQuaker.com for more on liberty, the zero aggression principle, and property rights.
And occasional hippie health rants.
Yeah. Go to BadQuaker.com. Thanks a lot, folks.